From deep inside the Death Star, I'm Larry Larson.
And I'm Chad Beter.
And I'm Andrew Richards.
And welcome to Defrag Tools. Chad, do you have a retraction? Anything you want to talk about today?
A little mea culpa from last week when we did the demo and I was showing how to set a breakpoint on a modem driver.
Yeah.
And I said on the show, or I said in the show notes last week in the comments, I said if anybody out there can figure out what I did wrong, and, you know, they get the brownie points. Because I didn't realize it till I went back and watched it myself. But it turns out
I couldn't work it out either.
So it turns out that, you know, when I dumped the dispatch table for the modem driver, and there were all the different types of ERPs that it could handle, and I set a breakpoint on the handler for ERP MJ power, which is a power ERP, which would be any case where we power the modem up, power the modem down, if for power management, obviously. And then I went to remove the modem from device manager. Mm. Well, when you remove a device, that's not so much a power thing as a PNP thing. So it turns out that what I should have set the breakpoint on,
was here we go, the bottom one,
is ERP MJ PNP, which would have hit.
Now, this is a different driver. I don't have a modem on my box. So I just grabbed a random driver. FastFAT is what I chose.
Right. So you dumped the dispatch routines here for FastFAT, which is the FAT file system and FAT32 file system. And that one, you'll see, has invalid device requests for the power ERP, and that's because a file system driver doesn't really handle power.
Yeah.
There's no physical device there. But it does have PMP because it still needs to load and unload, just like that modem driver did.
Yeah.
So you could probably demo that by setting a break on that and disabling FastFAT, but I don't know if you want to disable FastFAT.
This is also
a memory. Oh, it's a dump anyway, but... So. I would not recommend disabling FastFAT on a live machine anyway. That would probably
do. We know who caught this in the comments.
I don't know if anyone has yet. As
John,
of this
John
moment.
Had a really good stab at it, and actually, he was
pretty close. I think
he guessed the same thing I guessed, which I was wrong. But
let's look at the comments there. As of taping here,
A Jasmine.
All right, A Jasmine.
Pretty close.
Send us an email. I'll send you a Channel 9 guy.
Yeah.
Pretty close. It was. He said there that the modem wasn't powered on and that function is never called, and that's very close.
That's what I guess.
Although I think that the modem may have been powered on. In any case, whether it was or not is kind of irrelevant because if we do an IO remove device, then it would get powered off either way. So.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, send us an email. We'll send you a Channel 9 guy.
Yeah.
What are we talking about today?
We are looking at hangs in the kernel.
Awesome.
So we did it for user mode a lot, and we're going to do a quick run through of how you work out what's up in the kernel. Kernel's a bit limiting, you know, as public symbol versus private symbol issues, and we can't delve into the rabbit holes as far as we'd like, nowhere near as far as we do every day. But we can give it a good go and get somewhere. So.
All right.
So I took a couple of dumps. I actually took a dump of my Windows 7 partition because I couldn't, for some reason, I boot from VHD for Windows 8 and I couldn't get the dump file to make, and I need to look into why, but I'm not sure if we support dumping from boot from VHD. So I need to find out that. I've never looked into it, so I need to work out what the deal is.
When we do a memory dump, we switch over to a crash dump storage driver. So I don't know if that's implemented on VHD.
Yeah, I don't know if it knows how to go from, because it's a sector-based, I don't know if it knows how to put the VHD offset layering into the logic. So because when you take a dump, it just dies straight away. It doesn't even show that percentage of it running. So I took a couple of dump files at different times. I put my system under a little bit of stress and a huge amount of stress. And then what we're going to do is have a look. You could do bang analyze and that stuff, which will help you more towards crash scenarios. Bang analyze when it's just a hang dump isn't really going to help you much. In this case, I use not my fault. So if you did bang analyze, it's just going to say not my fault, crash the box, which is not actually what we care about. So what we need to do is the same approach of user mode. We need to give a holistic view of what the CPUs are doing. In the kernel, we look at the cores, the physical cores on the in the socket on the motherboard. In user mode, we look at the threads. And so in the kernel, threads are scheduled one by one in their own turn into the cores, and that's what we have to look at.
Is there any difference between 32-bit and 64-bit?
As far as scheduling goes, not really. Obviously, yeah, there's some bit size differences and the structures we keep around to remember who's in the CPU at any one time are different, but the actual concept itself is the same, and it's also the same for ARM, so your Surface would be the same thing. And even the Windows Phone, which is roughly the same kernel, runs the same way. And the Xbox too. So everything's kind of the same. So normally in user mode, you do tilde star K, and that doesn't work in kernel. So what you need to do is another command. It's called bang running. And bang running is designed for bigger machines. So what it does is this dumps of an 8-core box, and it filters out everybody who is idle. And what I'll do is I'll show what idle looks like. So you kind of are used to it. In kernel, you don't use S for set, to change set. You just use the straight number. It doesn't matter if you put the S on it. It's just going to ignore it. You'll get this stack a lot, and you just have to know that CPU is idle, which means it is in a sleep state, and that's great. That means you're saving battery life. Intel PPM, Intel Processor Power Management. What's the AMD one called? Is it called AMD PPM?
I can't remember off the top of my head, but there's a similar one.
Yeah, yeah.
The PO idle knows that, depending on the processor that it's running on, it will call into that processor driver's idle.
Yeah.
Routine, and that just puts the processor into a lower power idle state.
Yeah, so the PER driver knows how to talk to that CPU with the right instruction to put it into that feature set. So anything which has Intel PPM on it is, well, it's idle, and it's kind of irrelevant. If we look at the bang running output, you'll actually see that it's actually filtered those out. So 4 and 6 have been left. And you actually can, instead of seeing just, this is just the thread numbers, and this one's at priority 13, and this one's at priority 8. And then when it goes to, when these are finished, this is the thread that will do the idle processing. So once it's done work, this idle thread will be swapped back in, Intel PPM will run, and it will sleep it. We talked about timer coalescing a bit a while ago. This is where that comes to life. Timer coalescing means that everything's spread out, which means that driver can then put you into C1 sleep. It wakes up after C1, it goes, hey, there's no work, puts you into C2. Wakes up, hey, there's still no work, puts you into C3. And you get deeper and deeper, and they're longer and longer. And the deeper you get, obviously less cycles, and also more parts of the silicon are turned off. And it gets from a point where it's per core to per socket, and then you can actually drop down to bigger package and bigger and more hardware. It kind of like bubbles out into more and more power off.
As a rule, the deeper the sleep state, the longer it takes to recover, which is why we won't go into it immediately unless we're pretty sure it's going to be down for a while.
Yeah, I think it's like a whole lot of loops at C1, then we hit C2 and on. And then as you go up and higher in the OS versions, the algorithm gets more and more granular. So like, I think in Windows 7 we introduced the concept of, even though you're a bit hot, we'll actually keep you on one socket, one die, if we can keep the other complete socket turned off. We'll take the intermediate hit, and because if it's just a spike for a tiny little time, it's not worth powering up a whole thing, wasting all that energy for a couple of milliseconds, and then bring it down again. And so we actually will kind of starve the system a bit. It's all about a trade-off between power management and performance. And then obviously it gets to a point where it goes, oh, that's not good, and then it powers everything up and spreads the load.
And a lot of people think of power management just in terms of, portable devices and laptops, where it's very critical to extend the battery life. But really, power management has become more and more critical on servers as well, especially as these large data centers. Every watt you pay for. So
And when you look at a data center, I mean, you take that times however many machines, and probably thousands of machines.
It scales out. So there's been a lot of work put into Windows over the years to really maximize the power efficiency.
And I saw a video on the new power center design of Microsoft data centers, which is public, and I'll put it on the show notes. And it's like a 10-minute video, and they explain the evolution of the Microsoft data centers and how they've moved from these monolithic buildings with massive cooling pipes and stuff to these container designs and stuff, and air-cooled, and they're actually outside and, like a barn rather than anywhere else, and how we've migrated to always using hydroelectric and stuff like that. So I'll find that and put it on the link. So there's two guys working, right? And we can, if we wanted, we could do it the hard way and go bang thread this number. 17 is the magic number to resolve symbols, and then there you have it. It prints everything out. This was a kernel dump, so I don't see the user stack part of, side of things, and then you have it. Kind of laborious when you want to go through 100, maybe 1,000 cores or whatever, you know, some big number, 100 cores. So you actually can do it with the running command. So minus T is, instead of showing it as table with just the numbers, it shows you the threads. And so it gives you the report, and then under each line, it will then give you the thread each. And so that's really giving you this equivalent of tilde star K. In this case, you'll see that there's actually a very low number in this stack. And when I first saw that, I went, what? That's a bit weird. And I finally worked out what it is. This is a kernel dump, so it hasn't got user, right? This process is a 32-bit process. So that core currently is flipped into x86 mode, so it can do x86 support on 64-bit. Because it's actually, the CPU is actually twiddling up in user mode, and it hasn't dropped down in the kernel for any reason, for reading disk or something, that's why you're seeing a low number. It would actually give you a symbol if I had a full dump, a complete dump, but because I only have a kernel, that's why it's just a low number. So you can see here, we've got two threads working. This thread's working down in the kernel, and she's doing the bug check code itself, and this guy's working up in the up in user mode doing whatever he's doing, and I happen to know that I was doing a one thread on an infinite loop using one core up. So
you could at least see the name of the process.
Yes, so I could look at this thing and go bang, thread, and then 17 is the magic number. And then, actually, it wasn't me. It was actually antivirus.
Antivirus.
Of all things. So so it was doing something. So it was its ideal processor. So you can see some of the interesting things about scheduling. It wants to be on thread 7. Processor 7, but it's actually on 6 at the moment. So it knows that when it ran last, I was on this core, which means that this cache in this socket was populated more for me. And so we try to schedule things back onto the same one where you were last time, just from a cache efficiency down inside this actual socket. So those guys are running. So 2 out of the 8 are actually doing something. But the question is there work pending? And much like MSMQ, if people have used it, once you put it into a queue, it doesn't get rebalanced into another queue. And COMPLUS particularly has this as a concept. Work, once we schedule it into a CPU, we will wait for the person who's in front of you. So even if 5 other cores are empty, you're not going to get picked up and put somewhere else. Right? And that's also what I was talking about with the socket balancing. We put it onto certain cores to keep them hot, and we try to keep one core, as you get higher up in Windows, we try to keep one core at 100% and everything else blank, which means from a power management point of view, you're good. I can't remember what the stat is, but something like once you pass 50% usage, you're at full power consumption. Going from 50 to 100% is irrelevant. It's that bottom 25% of usage that actually is the power wattage graph. Once you pass a certain point, you're at full power consumption. Mm. So once you've passed, say, 25%, you want to put the rest of the work on that core because you're not going to cost you any more power. The other thing I'll point out now, and actually we'll see this in a couple of episodes, is we also changed the frequency of the chip. So as we try to scale up, if we can fit you into, say it's 50% load, we can actually make it 100% load and halve the frequency of the chip, which also will save power.
And heat too. Your laptop won't get as hot.
Yeah.
Fans won't spin up as much.
So these are the two guys running. So how do we find the people who are in the queue behind you, right? If there is and this dump's a bad dump because it doesn't have it, but there is a command called bang ready. So all these commands are actually matching the states. And so if I do ready, there's nobody queued up. The other thing that can be queued up is DPCs, and this dump is also not a good example. There's no DPCs queued up. So there's like these queues of work. So what does this look like when we treat it as a state diagram? So this is from Windows internals. Windows internals, without a doubt, in this space, is the Bible. Its scheduling chapter is fantastic and does go through every single nuance. It is one of those things that you have to be aware of the changes as Windows moves forward, but you don't have to adjust your thinking too much. Right? You just have to know, hey, we prioritize onto a single CPU in Windows 7 and 8, but the actual concept of scheduling it there is the same thing. It's just, you know, which of the sockets you chose rather than the sequence of event leading to that. And this is the state diagram. you are only doing something in the CPU if you are in the running state, right? And there's a queue of work to go in there. So when we did bang running, you saw the list of threads that fall into this category. When I did bang ready, it falls into this category. So this is threads who, for all intents and purposes, should be running right now, but because of lack of a resource availability of the CPU, isn't, right? But there's no reason why he hasn't been running. Deferred ready and standby and all these other ones and transitions, these ones here are more temporary state machines. You don't really need to look at them too much. The other one is waiting down the bottom here. So when you wait for a sleep or a timer or a wait for a single object, wait for an object, and you put a 10-second timeout on it, they all move you into the waiting state. And then via various mechanisms, a DPC timer table, an interrupt, whatever it is, or just your turn to go into whatever it is, when that happens, your state is changed from waiting to deferred ready and then ready. And then you'll finally get your chance to go into a CPU and actually do something. So as you can expect, if you look at an OS, 99.5% of threads are going to be in a waiting state. That's what you want. You don't want people banging away at the CPU.
Yeah.
If a lot of threads are in the ready state, that's usually not a good thing, because it means that your CPU's too occupied with running threads to actually give any love to the ready threads.
Yeah. So I have another dump here. So what I did is, instead of having a time bit of load on my box, I started 16 threads running 100% the time on an 8-core box. So that should put it well and truly into the saturation point. Then I also did a 30 gigabyte copy from the SSD to the SSD. I actually copied the VHD to myself. And then I also started a mesh, SkyDrive sync, and a scan on the box. So just
threw the whole kitchen sink.
Yeah, hammered it.
And I must say, actually, it's still quite responsive. Actually, I'm going, is that enough? Nice. But then when you look at the dump file, you go, yeah, that was enough. That pushed over the limit well and truly. But from a responsiveness point of view, actually, it wasn't that bad.
Did okay.
So I bang running, and as you can see,
all eight
are banging away doing something. Some of them are higher priorities. This one's 13, and this one's 8, and I'll get to priorities in a sec. What you can do, as I said, is you can do minus T to throw at threads. The other one you can do is you can put minus I on it. Actually, I should do this in the dump. And this will include the idle threads in the list, right? And so if you just want to have a general view of everything, minus I can include that, and as I said, T to turn it into threads. And so if you want to do the equivalent of tilde star K and just see everything, then the magic command is minus IT, and then you'll see the equivalent of that. As I said, the minus T way is the way to do it. You just want to see what's working. So, you know, this one's doing stuff. Here's the thread, a thread doing a bit of whatever he's doing, something in user mode. And that's my program. Aaron Magosis's demo program, doing all this heavy load. There's the page, my fault causing the outage. So let's have a look at, you can see everything's saturated, right?
All processors are busy, not idle.
Yeah. So ready are the people who are queued up to go into the core. And so let's just choose, 7's a good example. So 7's here, these bottom ones. So let's change to thread 7. And we'll have a look at him quickly. So he's doing some type of query, some process information. Might be opening a process information environment variable, something like whatever it is, some kernel thing for that.
Or a WMI query or something.
And so, I forgot to get the copy paste. So this guy currently in there, so minus one gives you the current thread, so you don't have to work out what the number is for the core. This guy currently in there is running at priority, where's priority? Here, priority 12.
It's pretty high.
Right there. And I'll point out these two right here, priority and unusual boost, and we'll get to them in a sec, but remember that those exist. So this guy's at 12. So unlike things which are like equally fair, until number 12, all the 12s have gone, and if we look at being running again, there is in the queue behind it 10, 9, and 8. Those five threads at those priorities will never get scheduled until the 12 disappears, ever. Oh, I shouldn't say ever, but in general, they'll never get scheduled. And this is why it's bad to do infinite loops and stuff like that in the kernel, right? Because you just or in your program, it's just starving a CPU of everybody else. So what are these priorities and where do they come from? They've got another picture from Windows Internals. So it was 12, and if you look at this one here, it's either one below the normal, the middle range of if your process is high. So this is the process priorities, these ones.
And you can change these through Task Manager.
Yeah, you can change through Task Manager. Actually, I'll show you one. So you can say, grab one and say, set priority, and you can move it. And what that does is it's moving the category that you are in, right? And you can obviously do it through APIs as well. So you can choose which category you're in, and then per thread within that, you can say which of, you know, are you getting a plus one, plus two, or minus one, minus two modifier on that. So the odds are that someone has started their process at 10, and they've boosted a single thread up to 12. And there was also 10 nines and eights hanging around, so 10, 9, and 8. So I haven't looked at Aaron's code, but I'm guessing that he may have 10, 9, and 8 in his code. And then the process one who was asking about some information was probably at the top, which may have been Process Explorer, maybe? I don't know. Someone did that. So if you find one program particularly is getting a little bit starved, you should rebalance your priorities. So why is this real-time thing way higher than the rest? There is a thing called the Balance Set Manager, and it runs at 16 and below. So once you move a priority above 16 up to this range, you in essence turn off all safety mechanisms in Windows, right? And it's the starvation mechanisms. And what's going to happen with this dump file, if you actually let it run, that 12, at some point we're going to go, man, you've been running a long time. That's not good. And this 10, 9, and 8 have been starved. And what subsystem called the Balance Set Manager is going to do is it's going to change the priorities of these five guys. And they're all going to get boosted up to 16. 16 is the magic number. Was it 15? Or one of those two. And what you'll see is, if I grab one of these guys who are waiting to go into the CPU, you will see that the priority is 10. The base priority is what the CPU was, what the process started at. And then what you'll see is when the Balance Set Manager changes it, so this will be 16 here, this will have the number of boost. So if it moved up to 16, then this value will be 6, because there's a difference between 10 and 16 is 6. And so what you'll see is these lower ones will get moved up to 16. As soon as a 16 exists, the 12 will be ejected, and the 16 will get its, will start running. And this is how you get rid of how the operating system gets rid of scheduling deadlocks. You may say, all right, I'm waiting for this event to be finished, but you might do it in a hot way rather than in an event way. It makes you unscheduled into waiting. You might just sit there and look at the variable nonstop in an infinite loop. And that's called a... what's QLOC stand for?
I'm not sure what you're getting at.
The kernel locks. The spin locks. Spin locks.
Oh, spin lock.
That's what a spin lock is.
Kernel can do that.
Where all we do is sit there and re. Done yet? At blisteringly fast, 100% CPU power speed. This fixes that scenario. It gets rid of the guy who's lower, who actually would have released it, releases it, it does some work. The problem is, if you are in real time, if you push yourself up to the real-time range, as I said, all safety mechanisms don't occur because it only gets you up to 16, I think it is, or 15. No, it gets you up to 15. And then if you're higher than that, that guy's just going to spin and never let go. So it's not a good idea to go real time. Sure, if you're having a temporary issue, like if you're trying to kill something that's gone rogue, right, change task manager to real time or presses explorer to real time, and then you'll have guaranteed that that guy will run, then you can go and kill that process that's, say, running at 15 and let go. If there is more than one at the same priority level, they all share their time. So, you know, you get to go, you get to go, you get to go, you get to go. And that's how scheduling works. What you want to do is just have a nice look at the box and see what's going on. And when it comes to threads that are hanging around in waiting, so that's just for... what's the presses going to have not many threads in it?
I don't know what you've got running on there. Like a standard process that's always... I'd have to look at the list.
I'll try Defender. Hopefully there's not too many. There is.
It's a lot.
Anyway, example's an example. So you can see some fours flying past there, some nines, some 15s, some eights.
Had one real time.
This guy is, the last thread is in the wait state, and it's actually waiting on a queue object. And here's the object that it's waiting on. So what you do is once you've found a thread that may be running heavy, look at the process that it's in, dump out all the other threads in the process, because they're the ones who know about each other, and then look at what other people are waiting on. And maybe this guy's combating with itself, and there's another thread that you can find interest in. And then we're down into the rabbit hole where it's per thing. So the general gist is start with bang running, equivalent of tilde star K, filters out all the idle threads. Idle threads are awesome. We want idle threads. And we'll go into C states a little bit later. And once you've done that, see if anybody's backed up behind it. If you see anything in the ready list, it definitely means that you are pushing the box a bit hard. Don't be surprised to see certain cores not have work where other ones are saturated. That's part of the power management balancing. If there's DPCs queued, so an interrupt turns into a DPC, DPC work is queued much like every other piece of work. DPCs will get scheduled before the bang running and bang ready work. And so if there's DPC queued, it means that other DPCs have stolen the CPU, which means that you have an interrupt saturation of your box. So instead of it being an application saturation, it's hardware saturation. So if you have a interrupt storm or just too much traffic coming in, say network-wise or something, you'll see that. And and then once you've got a good idea what's going on, have a look at the threads and look at their wait states and be aware of where things are in the model. And that's really all there is to scheduling, and we'll go into deeper.
And so what do we want to talk about next week?
Next week we are going to actually, the problem with dump files is, live dumps are a bit better, but the problem with dump files is they are now.
Yeah.
So you might say, hey, we're completely saturated. And we didn't know that in 1 millisecond, all those threads stopped. Right? We don't have a timeliness of it.
Snapshot. It's just a snapshot.
Yeah. And like user mode, where you can get lots of dumps in a row quite easily, it's hard to get a sequence of dumps in the kernel. Yes, you could do it with live KD is a good example. Breaking with a live kernel debugger like you did last week is another good example. But you still don't get a really good view. You're still sampling at a very low rate. And so we're going to look at some of the magic that's actually hidden away in the dump file that we've been alluding to for weeks, which is the XPerf goodies that are inside it. So we're going to do that.
Awesome. And that's the show for this week. If you want to write us, you can send an email to defragtools@microsoft.com, and we'll see you next week.
Have a good week.
Bye.